fund. Max Lawson added, families are struggling to get food on the table, our tax systems are making the rich richer, and the solution is glaringly obvious. We're talking about a small commitment with a potential for a huge impact. The Common Dreams website has also covered the same story. An analysis published on Friday, 14th of June, revealed despite historic levels of forced displacement due to armed conflict, the group of seven industrialized nations have increased their military expenditure to record highs, while they slashed spending on humanitarian aid for people affected by wars that these powerful nations often started or stoked. According to Islamic Relief Worldwide, an organization based in Birmingham, England, military spending by G7 industrialized countries, including Canada, France, Italy, Germany, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States, which wrapped up their meeting on Friday in Puglia, Italy, rose to $1.2 trillion last year. The overwhelming bulk of that amount attributable to the U.S. at $886.3 billion, Pentagon budget. It said too many governments are putting far more resources towards acquiring weapons of war than helping those suffering the deadly impacts of conflict. That's a 7.3% increase over 2022 levels, and 62 times what those countries spent on all humanitarian aid in response to wars and disasters. Islamic Relief Worldwide head of global advocacy, Shahin Ashraf, said in a statement, "From Gaza to Sudan, from Ukraine to Myanmar, we see millions of lives destroyed by war. The humanitarian needs today are greater than ever before, so it's scandalous that many wealthy G7 nations are cutting aid while spending more than ever before on weaponry." It's not just the G7 industrialized nations. According to this year's Stockholm International Peace Research Institute's annual analysis, global military spending increased 6.8% to a record $2.4 trillion in 2023. Shahin Ashraf said, "Too many governments are putting far more resources towards acquiring weaponry of war than helping those suffering the deadly impacts of conflict. More must be invested in eradicating poverty and fostering peace and development, not fueling war and destruction."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
With their brothers on the occupied side who have been enduring oppression under the Israeli regime since 1967.
The loss is great, but what consoles us is that they are martyrs. It is not strange for the savage Israeli enemy to fabricate lies and distort the truth, but the truth is that they committed this crime. What happened is a cornerstone of victory, for the blood of the martyrs paves the way to victory.
Overwhelmed with grief over the loss of 12 innocent martyrs, mourners expressed their outrage and condemnation of the Israeli occupation's crimes against their Palestinian brothers in Gaza. They praised the stance of their Syrian brothers who prevented Netanyahu from entering Majd al-Shams, calling him a fascist criminal.
"We condemn the cowardly Israeli act that targeted our people in Majd al-Shams, as it targeted our people in Gaza and Palestine in general. The stance of our people in the occupied Golan paves the way for liberation. by preserving their identity and their belonging to the Syrian Arab Republic.
The people of Quneitra and the occupied Syrian Golan called for the Israeli regime to be held accountable for its crimes in Golan and Palestine. They reiterated their faith in victory as an integral part of the resistance front.
From this land which late President Hafez al-Assad liberated, we, the sons and daughters of the Syrian Golan, affirm that we are one people in one battle against one enemy. History will witness the greatest victory, and we will liberate our Golan with our brothers in the resistance, and from there we will liberate Palestine.
Syrian citizens say the cheap tricks of the Zionists will not fool them. They also say that the occupying entity is the one that kills women and children with U.S. support and is solely responsible for the blood of the Majdal Shams martyrs.
The residents of the Syrian Golan continually demonstrate their patriotism by steadfastly rejecting the Zionist entity and its lies. They are determined to preserve their identity and their deep connection to their homeland. Ibrahim Wahdi, Al Qunaytira.
Palestine Square in Tehran once again became a focal point for voices raised against injustice as protesters gathered to express their disappointment with the International Olympics Committee. They say Israel's participation in the Paris Summer Olympics highlights what they see as a glaring double standard in the treatment of nations involved in conflict.
We have gathered here in Palestine Square to demand accountability. The Olympic Games should stand for peace, not for those who oppress and kill innocent children.
It's unacceptable that while Russia and Belarus were banned from the Olympics due to the war in Ukraine, Israel continues to compete despite its actions in Gaza. This is hypocrisy.
The Olympics is a symbol of good sportsmanship for all of us. That is why this is so unacceptable. We just want peace for everyone, especially the children in Gaza.
While the International Olympics Committee has taken a firm stance against Russia and Belarus, banning them from the Games as nations involved in warfare, many argue that Israel's military actions resulting in the deaths of tens of thousands of civilians, including women and children, should warrant similar scrutiny. Therefore, protesters in Paris echo voices from Tehran, emphasizing that the pursuit of justice and equality remains a central theme.
We want from all of the world, all of the people, to come through us, to come to walk beside us, to stand against Israel and its violent crimes.
Zionists have joined the France Olympic and because that this regime is a genocide, commits genocide, and we do not recognize this regime as one of the countries in the world. And so by that, we cannot tolerate such action.
These protesters express their frustration not only at the Olympics, but also at the broader international community, which they believe has failed to address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Many see this as a reflection of systematic bias in global politics.
These protesters have gathered to voice their opposition to Israel's participation in the Olympic Games, calling it a clear example of Western double standards. Yasin Chamadi, Tehran.
Never before in the history of the International Criminal Court have so many countries tried to block arrest warrants for people suspected of war crimes. Not long after ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan requested arrest warrants for Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu and his Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant, the UK, Germany, the US, and others joined forces to try and scupper or delay them. Others, such as Norway, Spain, and South Africa, came out in favor. But in a reversal of plans announced by the former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and under mounting public pressure, the UK's new Labour government has said it is pulling out of the process. While welcomed as a step in the right direction, it was blasted by Israel lobby groups, such as the Board of Deputies of British Jews, who expressed concern about its cumulative effect on Israel. The core tenet of the US-led legal challenge is that the ICC has no jurisdiction to prosecute Israeli leaders, an argument international law experts call tenuous.
Palestine has jurisdiction and can bring that claim because it is a party to the ICC and the Rome Statute. Now, One legal principle to note, and which is a principle that Israel may use, is say, well, we can investigate the crimes because ICC has what is known as complementary jurisdiction. It allows a country to investigate its crimes. But it is highly unlikely, as we've seen in the last year, for Israel to hold its own politicians and warmongers accountable.
Dr. Panjwani believes the arrest warrants will be issued only a few months later than expected. The same court took only a month to issue an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin. Not a single country intervened.
Well, that's a piece of string. Could be 1 month, could be several months. So I think it will occur, but two, it may take time because it is not in the political interests of the major players, whereas it was in the political interests of U.S. to have an arrest warrant issued for Vladimir Putin.
He also believes the decision to allow 64 interventions shows how politically sensitive the case is.
The ICC has long been accused of being a colonial court focusing only on African war criminals. But with the case against Netanyahu, the court is sending a message that no one is above the law. Now that the UK has dropped its legal challenge against those arrest warrants, Palestinian rights activists are hoping that it will support the ICJ and ICC rulings and, as immediate first steps, imposes an arms embargo on Tel Aviv and a ban on trade with illegal Israeli settlements. Saipur is up, London.
For many in Yemen's coastal cities, fishing is more than a job, it's a lifeline. Yet, this essential trade is fraught with danger. Fishermen are frequently targeted, facing airstrikes from American forces. The peril doesn't stop there. Recently, the Eritrean authorities released dozens of Yemeni fishermen. These men had been detained for months, subjected to torture, and had their tools and property confiscated.
We were fishing 16 miles away, and then an Eritrean ship came and shot at us to stop us. After they stopped us, they took us to an island and then chased the rest of the fishermen's boats and captured 5 boats. They looted everything we had and did not return anything. They even deprived us of food.
Since the Saudi-led war began in 2015, attacks on Yemeni fishermen by Eritrean forces have surged. Over 7,000 kidnappings have been recorded in Yemeni waters. Salim, a Yemeni fisherman, was kidnapped by Eritrean forces while fishing in Yemeni waters. He saw other detainees forced to work on construction projects under harsh conditions.
I went fishing and I got out of the mountain 13 miles away. I saw a big boat coming towards us, but it didn't run away or move. I didn't know it was an Eritrean patrol. It was dark at night. They took everything I had. I've been kidnapped 4 times over the years, and every time my belongings were looted. Even the fish tank was looted. I lost about $80,000 in these arbitrary arrests.
Salim's story is a stark reminder of the dangers these fishermen face daily. Despite international law, these attacks continue, highlighting the vulnerability of Yemen's coastal communities.
As Yemen's conflicts drag on, the plight of its fishermen remains a poignant example of the broader humanitarian crisis. However, helping Yemeni fishermen requires a great effort involving international humanitarian aid and support. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Hudaydah.
من به عنوان رئیس جمهور در پیشگاه قرآن کریم و در برابر ملت ایران.
Powerful words marking the dawn of a new chapter in Iran. Surrounded by high-ranking officials and over 100 foreign delegations, Masoud Pezeshkian solemnly takes the oath of office and officially begins his 4-year term as the 9th president of Iran. Leaders of the legislative and judicial branches offering their unequivocal support for the new president, transcending political affiliations as Pezeshkian sat next to an empty chair bearing the picture of his martyred predecessor.
Today, we witness a pivotal moment in our nation's journey. The president's oath signifies our commitment to the values of justice and governance. Following the guidance of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, we pledge our unwavering support to the president.
Words that resonate with the warm welcome Pezeshkian received from Speaker of the Parliament, who was once not so long ago his rival for the presidency. A heartwarming gesture as Masoud Pezeshkian steps into his new role, inheriting strong international ties that drew over 100 foreign delegations to the inauguration, underscoring Iran's growing presence on the global stage and a testament to the enduring efforts of the martyred President Ebrahim Raisi.
The successful conduct of elections and the smooth transition of power in such a short time, as mandated by Article 121 of the Constitution, marks a significant achievement for Iran. Meanwhile, the large number of foreign delegations attending the ceremony demonstrates that Iran is far from isolated. In fact, quite the opposite is true. Today, Iran has effectively established strong international ties, reinforcing its position as an important player on the global political stage.
And that is exactly why more than 600 journalists from around the world were also present to cover the ceremony.
The inauguration of the new president is very important with everything happening in the world right now. I think it might be something we will have to follow up.
Actually, China also sent a high-level delegation here to attend this ceremony. This is actually very important for us because a new president of Iran, that means maybe Iran have some new policies to develop the country and also develop their relation with the other countries.
And Pezeshkian did not miss the chance to make his stance clear from the very start.
Those who supply weapons to kill children in Gaza cannot lecture others on humanity and tolerance. No one will accept that.
Passionate words that echoed through the parliament.
Masoud Pezeshkian's swearing-in ceremony marks a pivotal moment in Iran's political landscape as he officially assumes office. The ceremony not only symbolizes a transition of power, but also sets the stage for his governance ahead. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Masoud Pezeshkian's presidential mandate was officially endorsed by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution in a ceremony held in Tehran on Sunday. The decree was read out at the event by the head of the leader's office with officials from different sectors of the country, as well as foreign ambassadors and representatives present. Delivering a speech at the ceremony, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei called Iran's democracy competitive and healthy, stressing that now a calculated, strong, and persistent economic mobility is required. The leader also emphasized that the three branches of the Iranian government, executive, legislative, and judiciary, along with the country's armed forces, should play their respective role wherever needed. Pezeshkian will take the oath of office in parliament on Tuesday. The 69-year-old heart surgeon garnered more than 16 million votes, defeating ex-nuclear negotiator Saeed Jalili in the second round of the presidential election on July 5th. The election was called after Ebrahim Raisi passed away in a helicopter crash in northwestern Iran in May. In a speech, President Pezeshkian called for unity in the country.
Only through convergence and law adhering within the administration will be able to overcome the difficulties and in this way realize people's wishes. A society that abides by the law can see the administration becoming more powerful and play the crucial role for the development of the country. In order to realize this goal, I remain committed to the visions delineated by the leader, the general policies submitted by the leader. If we believe in this future vision, if we fulfill and operationalize the leader's policies, we will make considerable progress.
In his decree, Ayatollah Khamenei has said that the nation's vote and his endorsement will remain intact as long as Mr. Pezeshkian's consistent approach in following the straight path of Islam and the revolution continue. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
In the wake of a devastating landslide, Ethiopia has declared 3 days of national mourning
Rescue teams are working tirelessly to recover the bodies of those lost in a series of deadly landslides that struck the southern part Gofa zone last Sunday and Monday. According to reports, the landslides have claimed the lives of hundreds of people so far. The UN Humanitarian Office has warned that the death toll could reach 500. Local officials also say the magnitude of the accident is high. The devastating landslide has left many in the Gofa zone grappling with unimaginable loss. Families have been torn apart, with loved ones tragically taken from them. Alemi Tusoma, a resident of the Genjo Shochagozi district, is among those who lost their loved ones due to the incident.
My husband died in the southern mudslide and I buried his body. I'm now left alone with my twins. Besides, my sister is also dead and her body has not been found. I'm searching for her corpse. Now everything is dark. I'm burnt and I feel abnormal. I don't even know where I should go.
Soma's pain mirrors the heartbreak felt by many in Gofa zone, where the shocking landslide occurred. Local officials say there are also people who lost their entire families in this incident. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed expressed his deep sorrow after the catastrophic incident, saying he is deeply saddened by this terrible loss. His words reflect the grief felt by the nation as a whole.
During the 3 days' mourning, beginning as of Saturday, people across the country will honor those who lost their lives in a tragic event. And of course, for the coming 3 days, Ethiopian national flag will be flown at half-mast across the country, on Ethiopian ships, and at embassies around the world. Emmanuel Gebremedin, Addis Ababa.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of young medalists in national and international student and university Olympiads. The meeting took place in the leader's office on June 15, 2024. Created the revolution. The people did, mainly young people. This is the role of the people. And the more these young people think, are decisive, and are determined, the deeper and greater will be this impact. In Kumail's application, you read, "Strengthen my limbs for your service." This is the first one. Well, a young person has stronger limbs and strengthen my resolve in my heart. Strengthen my heart with the ability to make strong decisions. Young people have a greater capacity in decision-making. And it continues on until the end. I don't want to translate the Kumail supplication for you now. So this is how young people are. You can change the country and steer it in a positive direction. You may have some concerns, and you can truly work towards solving those problems. Don't wait for someone like me to tell you what to do to solve those concerns. No, think for yourselves. Think, find a way, get together, collaborate, brainstorm, and find solutions for overcoming obstacles.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Find intellectual solutions. Find solutions that are right for you. I believe there are many things you can do. I have written down two things that I would like to share with you. One is that being an elite is a journey. It is a path, not a fixed point. This is the point that one of our friends here also mentioned, and I like that very much. We cannot just say that now that I have become an elite, that's it, and this is finished. It's just the beginning of a journey. You won a medal, or let's say you achieved a high rank in the university entrance exam. This is the beginning of a journey, and you must continue moving forward. What does progress in this journey entail? It entails creativity, intellectual creativity in your intellectual pursuits, and practical creativity in your practical endeavors. You must work hard and strive in the fields of science, technology, and the promotion of ethics and spirituality.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The spotlight.
The then president of the Islamic Republic of Iran has been sworn in. In his speech to domestic and foreign dignitaries attending a ceremony in the Iranian parliament, Masoud Pezeshkian elaborated on a number of his plans as new president. He vowed he'll try to boost relations and interactions with other countries, especially the neighboring ones and those in the West Asia region. He also stressed that while Iran is for negotiations, it will not bow down to coercion and pressure from world powers that need to treat Iran on an equal footing and on the basis of mutual respect. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Let me introduce our guests in this episode. Mohsen Naqvi, activist and commentator, is joining me out of Houston. Also with us is Masoud Shajar, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London. Welcome to the Spotlight, gentlemen.
Let me President of Houston, Texas, first. Mohsen Naqvi, President Pezeshkian said in his speech that his administration wishes, among one of the things that has top priority in his administration, is to forge relations with other parts of the world, you know, with the entire world, except for, you know, the Israeli occupation regime. There are very few exceptions. So he said that he wants to create balance in foreign relations, national interests, and requisites of peace and security in this part of the world and beyond. Let's have your thoughts on this aspect of his speech.
Yes, surprisingly, the president's speech was truly a good surprise for, I guess, most people, especially his critics, because we weren't expecting him to describe his plans and his intentions as a president in such a wholesome manner. Mm-hmm. He covered his intent to not only secure ties with their neighbors, emphasizing on the neighbors, hence continuing the legacy of Sheikh Ibrahim Raisi, Shahid Ibrahim Raisi, but also ensuring that the world sees the Islamic Republic of Iran as a power, as a regional power. They see them with respect on an equal footing. And he also said that he will try his best while maintaining dignity to lift sanctions with on the Islamic Republic of Iran, because it is the right of the Islamic Republic to be able to compete with other economies on an equal stage. So this is these were very good comments that were made by him, in my opinion. Also, the fact that he emphasized on the justice, the inherent justice that the Palestinians have claimed and are fighting for, is a right that he, as president, would ensure that the Islamic Republic of Iran carries forward, and that their struggle for a free Palestine and the support for the axis of resistance will continue. So we won't see much change in terms of external policies, and some of his statements on internal policies were also very similar to Shahid Raisi's government.
Right. Now, Masoud Pezeshkian also said that his administration, he said that we want interaction with the world, we want cooperation and ties with the world, but his administration, he stressed, will not surrender to bullying, to coercion, and double standard. And that's in reference to the West, as you know. So he said, we have two decades of experience negotiating with world powers, and that has taught us this lesson that Iran has been in compliance with its commitments. But at the same time, it's for negotiations. At the same time, it's not going to give in to excessive demands and pressure. So how would you predict, I mean, maybe better yet, let me put it this way, what would be advisable for the West and Western states? What kind of approach and posture had they better adopt vis-a-vis Iran?
Well, the reality is that there was an illusion have been created, especially in the West, where we are, both myself and Mr. Naqvi, that the elections in Iran, the process, is these are sort of opponents of one another, and it's sort of elections everywhere else is being promoted as a sign of democracy if there is a difference of opinion, but in Iran it's being promoted by West, be it BBC, be it CNN or anything else, is that, you know, they're trying to put sort of candidates against each other and saying that, you know, the people are, this is a fight beyond what is described as a good part of democracy. And so when it comes to, you know, today in inauguration, people are surprised that really when it comes to major issues, Iranians, no matter who represent them, from which side, is they have sort of the same vision of dignity and their inherent right and they're demanding the international community and the West in particular to sort of deliver what they preach, deliver when it comes to sort of promoting democracy, deliver when it comes to sort of fair play, deliver when they're talking about they make decisions on economical basis, and the concept of justice when it comes to world economy and so forth. So, and what was very clear today that Mr. Raisi re-emphasized that the experience that Iran has gone through in the last few decades, it gives it first that determination to seek its just position internationally, and also is not going to be conned and fooled by rhetorics, and it wants to see action which are based on mutual understanding, mutual respect, etc., etc. In some ways, really, one would have expected that the Shahid Raisi to give exactly the same speech, because this comes not on a personality of this president or the previous president. This comes in the sort of way of the expression of the public opinion in Iran, overwhelmingly public opinion. There isn't really two sides of the story when it comes to people in Iran demanding to be respected and have their relationship with everyone based on mutual respect and mutual interest. And I, you know, on answering your question, what West should do, West should wake up that they cannot go around bullying people, and definitely their past experience, if they will draw on their past experience in the last few decades, should bring them to the realization that they cannot bully Iran any longer, and they should respect Iran in the same way that they want to be respected.
Right. Mohsen Akhbi, Masoud just mentioned the West, and President Pezeshkian urged that the West to treat Iran on an equal footing and based on respect. This is the language that Iranians should be addressed to. And he also promised to win Iran the appropriate status in the world in terms of economic and, you know, commercial ties with other countries, and also at the same time dealing with the unjust anti-Iran sanctions imposed on the country. And, you know, Europeans have shown reaction. President Macron of France the other day called Pezeshkian, and he said that we are eager and we are hopeful to see improved relation between Europe and Iran. The question is, would they do that, or is it only lip service? Because the U.S. has not allowed them to do what they said they would do. Like they said, they would compensate. They came up with this plan, 11-12-point article plan. They said, well, no worries, we will try to compensate what the U.S. didn't do in terms of JCPOA, but they failed to do it under pressure. What about this time?
Well, the U.S. has had a history of not abiding by their contracts, not abiding by the commitments that they have made with different countries, and obviously in particular with the Islamic Republic of Iran as well. And another mistake that the West in general has made, that they have always underestimated their foes, and they have done exactly that with the Islamic Republic of Iran as well. The Islamic Republic has become a force to reckon with. They cannot be ignored, and let's not forget that they have become a regional power in spite of the sanctions, the illegal sanctions that have been imposed by them on the West. All of this seems like lip service, because that's what history teaches us, that the United States and its allies, specifically those in Europe, they do not want to see a strong, powerful force in the region of West Asia. The only powers that they want to see are the ones that they have placed, which are the monarchs in Jordan, in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, and others. And unfortunately for them, things have changed. Over the past 20 years, the Islamic Republic has positioned themselves in a way that they have not only just strengthened themselves, but they have also empowered their allies. They don't dominate their allies, they empower their allies. Allies in Iraq, allies in Afghanistan, allies in Lebanon, and others, obviously. And the fact that is that Iran, that the Islamic Republic of Iran, is now focusing towards stability, economic stability within the region. Their focus is now to move away from the dollar in partnership with Russia and China. These are all concerns that the West has. And the West doesn't have an option anymore. It is not a matter of predicting what the Islamic Republic can achieve. It is a matter of facing reality at this point, meaning the nine-month war that has been imposed upon the innocent Palestinians. Those groups, the axis of resistance, who are supported by the Islamic Republic of Iran, who are trained by the Islamic Republic of Iran, Islamic Republic of Iran is part of the axis of resistance. Right. They have defeated the United States. They have defeated their allies in this region. And this is not the first time that they're doing this. Hezbollah defeated them in 2000. In 2006, we saw Yemen defeating Saudi Arabia. We saw the Hashd al-Shaabi fight against U.S.-backed ISIS in the region. So consistently and continuously, the plans of the U.S. have failed. They don't have a chance anymore. It has become a matter of existence for the Zionist regime in the region of West Asia. So they have to take them seriously. And as far as President Pezeshkian is concerned, as my colleague also mentioned, that it almost seemed as if this was that perfect continuation that the Islamic Republic required. And inshallah, we see that Reber's guidance and Agha Raisi's legacy will be implemented from what we see from today's speech.
Okay. Masoud Mohsen just mentioned Palestine and the resistance front. So let me ask you this question first, and I was asked about some other aspects of the speech that Pezeshkian made. Well, the president said that those who provide weapons to the Israeli regime, that bombs the women and children in Gaza, they cannot teach other countries lessons of moral virtues. And said that no one on the planet endorses backing a regime that fights women and children in Gaza. And they act as if human rights are determined on the basis of complexion, race, or faith, as selected by the West. So that's part of his, another highlight of his speech today. So the question is, on what basis did U.S. congressman, you know, stood up and gave a standing ovation to the child killer regime prime minister and applauded Netanyahu during his speech?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of watching that scene was so absurd and really showed why United States is not a power anymore, why United States is losing its sanity, its morality, and indeed its power, military power, and influence around the world. And it deserves to do so. I mean, it is really outrageous. After everything that we have witnessed on our TV screens, and after all that has been said by the international community and the international court, ICJ, they dare to come and behave so in such an abomination, in such a way that is actually a affront to humanity. But I think this is what we are expecting now and from now on. United States is not the power that it was, and is not. It hasn't sort of dictated any morality around the world, or power, be it economical or political or militarily. It's diminishing by day, and it's opposite. We are seeing Iran is becoming much more powerful, much more independent, and much more respected. I mean, you know, in the last 10-20 years, we've seen the influence of United States diminishing, not just in West Asia, but right across the world. And in the same time, Iran's have become more popular, more sort of powerful, and more respected. And, you know, joining organization like Brexit, et cetera, having a better relationship, much better relationship with his neighbors, which in past they were satellite states of United States of America. So things are moving. This is a real world, and nothing United States could do to stop this or change it. And I think those who got visions for the future need to recognize this. And I mean Europeans, they need to wake up and smell the coffee and realize that things are changing beyond sort of what they could imagine. And the boat has, you know, moved on. You know, the things are moving on. And if they want to be part of a sort of a international community, which is based on international law, respect, mutual respect, and all those principles, then they need to drop U.S. as a sort of boogeyman, as a sort of bully man, and stop that. Really.
Yeah, the Europeans have been smelling coffee, Masoud. You're American-made coffee, so they better try Iran-made exquisite tea this time. It will prove to be much better than U.S.-made coffee. Okay, it's good. It's worth a try at least. Now, Mohsen, of the essence in Iran's foreign policy is having better relations with neighboring countries. We have already great relations with neighbors and regional states, but Iran is saying, and the new president is also stressing, that this needs to be augmented and further expanded. He believes that we need to join hands in this region, in the West Asia region, or in other words, Middle East, as people in the West call it. We need to rely on one another's capabilities and possibilities, join hands together. We won't need extra regional players in this part of the world in terms of security, in terms of whatever you name it. So is this the right policy to be pursued at this sensitive juncture? Or there are some people who say that we got to turn to the West and talk directly to the Americans and get what we want them to get. But given the U.S. past performance and West's performance, do they really care an iota about Iran or other people in the West Asia region?
I mean, I think it would be foolish to try policy that have already been tested and failed. We saw in the governments of President Khatami, we saw under President Rouhani, while Agha Zarif was the foreign minister, that there was so much hope that was put in to the nuclear negotiation. There was so much hope that was put in to the lifting of those sanctions, and so much time was spent on that to no avail. But in such less time, we saw within President Raisi's time, his focus naturally was to lift those sanctions, but he kind of shifted the focus more towards regional powers, in empowering their neighbors, in empowering the region as a whole, and to expand their ties. So if Russia and China are sanctioned, if they have limited sanctions by the West, and the Islamic Republic does as well, it only makes sense that they expand their economic ties. It only makes sense that the Islamic Republic increases its ties with Azerbaijan, with Iraq, with Pakistan, for instance. And within Agha Raisi's tenure, we saw that this focus seemed to bear more fruits than the previous ones. And so it wouldn't make any logical sense if that foreign policy was shifted towards focusing on lifting on seeing hope from the U.S. in general. There were two main contracts that were fine. It was BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation. The Islamic Republic became a member. The Islamic Republic has so much to offer, so much to offer to the world. And I was just thinking about this the other day. The one area that the Islamic Republic can really, really empower this region is in academics. Right. The Islamic Republic's academia is underestimated. And I think there we will see a shift in that the Islamic Republic will become a regional power in terms of their ideology now as well, as we see the world progress towards fighting against oppression.
All right, Masoud, we have 1 minute left only, and there's only one highlight I just wanted to comment on. Pezeshkian saying we're all in the same boat in this tumultuous world today. So let's move forward with the aim of tranquility and progress for our people. What needs to be done to this end?
Well, I think we need to be realistic. We need to recognize that what was tried at the sort of by Mr. Zarif and others is no longer, that train has already left the station. And we are now dealing with the United States, which is rapidly losing its power and its influence, and indeed could become much more dangerous. And the rest of the world needs to unite and think of their future, mutual respect, mutual interest. And that is, those are the key words. And the fact is that, as he said, we want to have, Iran wants to have relationship with everyone based on respect, but it's not going to hold its breath waiting for United States to change its mind. And it will move forward with them or without them.
Okay. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Thank you so much, Mohsen Naghvi in Houston and Masoud Chajri in London. And thank you. I've been your host, Behrouz Najafi. I'll see you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website.